Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we are here for almost the end of Season 7. Three more episodes, one of them pretty bizarre, but you know what? We'll get there. It's a weird episode this week.
They're all a little weird,
but there's a legit weird one this week. I'm not going to say it's Matt Gubler's best episode, but it's certainly one of his top episodes.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say about this one.
This one, yeah.
But you know what? Let's get right into it with episode 1, 719, Heathridge Manor.
When a Medford, Oregon mathematics teacher is found dead of nicotine poisoning in a long-abandoned psychiatric institution, and a list of potential victims is discovered at the crime scene, the BAU sets out to profile a Satanist with a dangerous obsession that stems from a troubled past.
Aww. Which, by the way, that is kind of the most generic thing imaginable. Like, oh, okay, so the Satanist has a troubled past? You know, unlike all of those Satanists who grew up in happy homes. You know, those Satanists.
Sorry.
So yes, this is a very entertaining hour of television. I'll just say that. I got no shame about admitting that I was really had a good time watching this episode. It's crazy.
It's a crazy
hour of television, but it is, you're not,
fun.
It is fun. You know, you will be entertained by this one. Here's the thing. This is nothing against, I don't remember the actor's name, Beaver Casablancas for Veronica Mars.
Yes.
I've never remembered that actor's name once, but here's the thing. Let's just say he's not handsome. Because, this is one criticism. I love the actor. I think he was great on Veronica Mars. Just a horrible monster on that show. Horrible monster here. But the thing is, when you hear him described, you're like, he's got to be handsome and charming enough that a woman's going to walk out of a bar with him the first time she sees him. And I'm like, yeah, that's not him, though. Like, we're all looking at the same person, right?
Obviously not.
This very short, plain-looking guy.
Yeah.
It's just, when they describe the kind of guy who is in the bar, it's like, oh, yeah, good-looking guy, good-looking rich guy. Of course she went off with him. Makes perfect sense. And I'm like, yeah, but do you see him, though?
Yeah, no, he's well put together. And he's well put together. Rich.
And he's rich.
And he is rich, but...
But he is not handsome, and he's definitely not charming.
No. He's not blonde-haired, blue-eyed, rich.
No, but he's not even, you know, a David Boreanaz dark brooding type. You know,
yeah.
he's just not. No. He's a plain guy, and there's nothing wrong with being a plain person, right? But...
Looking.
Exactly. Plain looking. Yes, you're right. There's nothing good about being a drab person. But there's nothing wrong with being plain looking. And the idea that, oh, yeah, well, no, of course she was desperate for attention from a guy. She was not that attractive, so she was desperately looking for attention from a guy this handsome. I'm like, nope.
No.
No.
No, no, no. That's not what's going on here. But anyway, that's just the writers.
It's the casting. In the writing, I'm sure he was a devilishly handsome David Boreanaz type.
Well, this is what I was going to say.
Or a...
Never mind.
What's the Jamie Dornan? Is that who plays your Christian Grey? You know, that type.
Yeah.
That's what they're going for. But that is not what they got.
Blonde hair, blue eyed, and whoever decided to cast it.
And went a different, well, no.
Or the handsomest guy in the world.
Matt Gubler decided to cast it because I assume he was a fan of Veronica Mars. Because who isn't? Everybody loves Veronica Mars.
And
Veronica Mars is back, by the way. It is back. No,
it just came back.
Yeah. I mean, by the time people are listening to this, it came back 5 months ago. But for us, we're very happy that Veronica Mars is back, and I will be watching it this weekend. but yeah, he's a... God, he was such a monster on that show. It's one of those things that's hard to get over, what a monster he was in that show. And I remember people feeling betrayed that he turned out to be the villain. Because, you know, so many nerdy young dudes so empathize with that character. And it's like, you know, the nerdy harmless dudes who get bullied by life and they so empathized with that character that they're felt betrayed that he's the villain. And it's like, yeah, there's a dark side to that kind of thing, though. To that kind of, you know, nerdy guy. And that's what the character was about. And I just love, oh, they made him the villain just to, for a shock. It's like, no, like, no. He was brought into the show specifically. He was brought into the show in the last episode of season one, specifically to be the villain of season two.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't decide at the last minute he was the villain just to surprise people. No, like, Dick Cassablancas never had a brother for the whole first season. Then suddenly he's got a brother in the last episode. Yeah. Just because they need a villain for season two.
And they can't get rid of any of the other people that are on the show. Exactly. Because everybody likes them.
Everybody likes the rest of the cast. So, well, except for, you know, oh god, Duncan. But Duncan was getting out of that show no matter what in season two. Oh, anyway, we love Veronica Mars is, I guess, the point.
It is the point.
But yes, this is a perfect example of what I call, like, Matt Gubler's whole ethos, which is his love of the gothic, his love of the moody music, his love of interesting, somewhat impressionistic lighting. And who's the cop? Oh, it's Freddy Krueger.
I love... Yeah.
You know?
And his love of horror movies.
Oh, God, yeah. He's obsessed with horror movies. That's the thing. Like, he is absolutely obsessed with horror movies, the visuals of horror movies, the aesthetic of horror movies, and, of course, the actors from horror movies. And it's like, that is what you get out of a Matt Gubler episode. And that is... This is, like, in a sense, the quintessential, when I think of a Matt Gubler episode, this is the one. You know, the previous one about the witch house, where, you know, that was really good, too. But, like, when I think Matt Gubler, I think, okay, demons. I think, you know, creepy New England houses. I think, you know, again, horror icon Robert Englund showing up. This is kind of perfect in its own way. Like, this is exactly what you want out of one of his episodes. And so it is not a disappointment at all. And I want to make it clear that I'm not disappointed about anything in this episode. I'm not complaining about anything in this episode. I really I'm complaining No, I mean, it's like, you heard me. I complained about what I complained about, but fundamentally, I like his style, and I think this is the best example of his style.
Yeah.
You know? And because the thing is, fundamentally, it's not, it's interesting because it gives us a chance to get lost in the style because we spend so much time with the killer and his sister.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because it's not, fundamentally, it's not a complicated mystery to solve.
No.
Because he dresses them up in these ridiculous costumes. And literally the first person they go to talk to about the costumes in the town is like, oh yeah, I know exactly what these costumes are. BTW, you know, the last time these costumes were worn, one of the actors tried to murder all of her co-stars. Yeah. And she had a 10-year-old son. Oh, okay, well, problem solved.
Oh yeah, but the twist in that was just horrible, though.
Oh, no,
that is just so horrible.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't want to gloss over how good that was.
Oh, that was just and oh, excuse me, and you forgot Juliet Landau.
I know, Juliet Landau.
You know, Drusilla at her worst.
I know. Oh, Drusilla, such a great character. But yeah, it's like, again,
from Buffy. If case
from Buffy, yes. People, yeah. In case people don't watch Buffy, she was Drusilla on Buffy, and she was one of the all-time great villains. Mm-hmm. We loved her the most. But yeah, it's like just one after another. There's these great people you want to see turn up over and over again. There's great performances in this episode, and you know, I don't know if Matt Gubler is just really good with actors or if he just casts people who are consummate professionals and then just lets them do their things, but there's not really a false moment in this one. Like, I really liked all of the interplay between the brother and the sister. Like, his creepy, controlling monstrosity.
Oh, it was terrible.
It is. It's terrible.
It's just
He's so terrible. Horrible. And you really buy it. You know, like, that he has been completely consumed by this madness of his mother.
Of his mother, yeah.
Yeah.
But why?
Please.
Why? He's not that much older than his sister.
He's 10 years older. Yeah. She went nuts after she had her second kid, and she already had a 10-year-old son. They say that in the episode. Yeah. He's supposed to be 25, 26, and she's just turned 16.
Yeah, and she's just turning 16. Yeah, he's 26, but I'm going, when did the grandfather die?
The last year. 1 year ago, and that
so,
is when
yeah,
he...
So he would have been old enough to have been left as the guardian for his sister. Well,
exactly, because the thing is, and because you got to remember, he's schizophrenic. He's inherited from its mother, and he has stopped taking his medication after the grandfather died. And so when he was made guardian at age 25 or 24, he was a stable guy who was studying to be a priest, and he got called home because his grandfather died to take care of his sister. And then he stopped taking his medication, and that's how we ended up here.
Okay, but didn't somebody say he was expelled from the seminary?
Was he expelled, somebody... or did he... Oh, you're right, he was expelled from the seminary.
But,
you're right.
Never follow up on that.
Yeah, no, I'm remembering it wrong. You're right, I remembered it as being he left to take care of the sister, but you're right, I think he was expelled from the seminary.
Yeah,
possibly after news of possibly he went nuts after news that his mother died.
Yeah, but never mind. That was the only real I just went.
Wait,
no,
what?
no.
Yeah,
no,
it's probably
no,
a straighter no, no. line the way I described it, like a straighter line that makes more sense the way I described it. If he had been, if he had dropped out to take care of his sister after his mother died, and then he stopped taking
after
his meds.
After his grandfather died.
After his grandfather died. Because his mother died back in the 90s. Like, right after.
She burned the place down.
She burned the place down and died.
Mm.
Uh-huh. Oh, God. It's a creepy episode.
It's a creepy, creepy episode. And
they do the great stuff in the asylum. I love the set they built there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Looks so good. What was the other thing that got to me? Oh, and maybe Satan's real?
No, because
I know. That's just her delusion.
It's just a delusion because they make that clear.
Oh, no. They make it 100% clear that it's just a delusion.
That there's nobody there that she's talking to.
Yes, but I mean, would Satan appear to mortalize? I know. Of course.
Following on the demonology problem.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah. Every now and then we get demons, and it's like, okay.
Every now and then.
What are you
trying
to tell us?
It's this weird thing between demonology and the one with the demons that had been plaguing a guy his entire life and got him to murder people. And now this one. I'm just saying. And then you got suspect behavior. Where they're just full on, no, demons are real. What? Who said demons weren't real? What are you, an idiot?
Yeah,
unsuspect behavior. So I'm just saying, you put this stuff together, and it's like there's an interesting theology going on behind the scenes at Criminal Minds. A strange understanding of the way the world works seems to be operating behind the scenes, is all I'm saying. But yeah, now, overall, I think this might be my favorite episode of this year, because it is such a straightforward mystery, because the character stuff between the siblings works so well, and I'm just trying to think, like, the one thing that I would like to know more about, so obviously when this kid was growing up, right?
Yeah.
He heard from his mother about her fixation on demons all the time.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess he just passed that along to his sister her whole life growing up. Because she would want to know about her mother. And so, and all of the stories he tells about the mother, about how she was fixated on this and demons are real and their family has to protect people from demons and all of that stuff, right?
yeah, that's what I what you have to kind of gather from this episode, right? Is that she's just heard all of this all her life, and she believes her big brother.
Yeah.
Right?
Because again, it's weird. I think you could almost stretch this episode out to feature length. Like, I think this could have been a movie.
You could have made this into a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I think there's enough story here. The characters are interesting enough. The situation is compelling. Like, this could have been a movie.
Well, you would have started out with the mother.
Yes.
You know, like, if you were doing a movie, you would have had a segment about the mother.
Right at the start.
With the mother's murdering. Yeah.
Yeah, with the mother's trying to kill people.
Because it would be a different movie. It wouldn't be Criminal Minds.
No.
So you would start out with the mother. And then you would get years later, right?
Yeah, you would follow up with the kids, and then you'd see the cops who were investigating it. It's like, it's just such a rich subject. Again, it's such an interesting episode that it's like, you almost want there to be more of it. And here's my question to you, and I'm going to ask you if this is me reading into it, because I'm not going to say you definitely have the same opinion I do, but isn't it a little weird how closely the killer's character in this, how exactly he mirrors Reed?
Yes. Yeah.
It's interesting.
That is very noticeable. Whoever wrote this episode, right?
Yeah.
It's Reed's character writ large. I mean, it's this insane mother.
This insane mother who has infected her son and defined what his life is going to be with her madness.
Yeah, with all her madness. And
the thing is. Yeah. It is only, and it's a question, we talk about to what degree are the writers aware of Meta Reed and the fact that he has been infected with this madness by his mother, right, to become a cop, to become a modern-day knight in the same way. And this episode kind of suggests that at least some of the people were aware of how sick Reed is and how sick the relationship with his mother is, because like this is a kid who has been driven by his mother's madness to become a witch finder.
Yeah.
And is that really so different from what happened to Reed?
No, it's not. It's not at all. I mean, I don't disagree with you, and I don't think I'm stretching it. What I'm wondering though is, like, to me, well, we will see what happens in the last 10 episodes of this show, what they do with this Matthew Gray Gubler character with Spencer Reed. It will be interesting to see what they do, because in some ways it may not be the writers. It may be that because this is, again, it is a relatively coherent episode.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
From beginning to end. Completely.
Totally.
It's driven by the characters. The team plays very little. And that's also with the witch, with the witch house, you know?
Yes, witch house episode.
Exact the gingerbread same thing. House episode, yeah, right? Yeah. It's the same thing. It's driven, you get more of the story. Here it's even more so, like, you know, that it's almost as if the team is sort of just an add-on.
Yeah, they're observers to what's going on this week. Yeah.
Yeah, a Criminal Minds. And they find him relatively, once they figure out that it's, first of all, nicotine poisoning, and then the costumes are a dead giveaway.
Oh, yeah. Once they just ask around town about the costume, they're just there. Like,
well, it's the second one, right?
Yeah.
That makes the...
them focus on the costumes. Yeah.
That makes them focus on the theater and the costumes. Right. But I mean, and then this child has, isn't that, that's, and the brother, of course, has always told the sister, right? That's the problem, right? The brother has always told the sister that she was born with this defect.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right. And it turns out that the mother has chopped it off.
Has chopped her arm off to make her less attractive to the devil.
Yeah, well, you know, the devil.
So the devil won't come to... I know, the devil's not that particular.
No, I don't think the devil's that particular. He rules in hell. I don't think that's going to get the job done?
I don't know that no, that's going to get so. The job done.
So anyway, but yeah, and it's, but it's the same thing. Yeah. You have the mother, like the one, the funny thing is when you go back to Revelations, right?
Yeah.
What you've got is that same scene of the mother and the son in bed.
Mm-hmm.
She's reading him a story, just like Reed's mother. Oh, no,
exactly.
I don't think
it mirrors it exactly.
It mirrors it, and it's a story about knights, and it's a story about all of these things that his mother is obsessed with from the fire episode. You know, the guy who, whatever I call, you know, the two-parter at the end of season one? Two?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know the Fisher King.
Yeah. Thank you. The Fisher King ones, right? So no, it's set up and fits. Like you could probably take a bunch of these episodes and create kind of the narrative story of Reed. Yeah. But yeah, this parallels this, except of course there's no other children involved
in Reed's story. Yeah.
Yeah, and in Reed's story, there are no demons.
No.
Just schizophrenia. Just
Arthurian. Well, no, and Arthurian legend. I mean, that's well, the thing.
But there are no demons. Like, there are no demons.
There are just villains. Yeah. There are just villains to be smited. There are not demons.
Yeah, you know, he's not on a quest to rid the world of demons. It's not supernatural.
No. And that is, that could be why it's not as toxic in Reed as it is in this guy. Although, honestly, at this point, I'm not saying that it's definitely going to happen. But if it turned out Reed had been killing people this whole time, I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised, and that would be a bold way for the show to go out.
Yeah. In a pig die.
I know they don't have the guts to do that. There's like everything we know about Reed. You can't tell me you would be surprised if it turned out he'd been killing people this whole time.
And if he had, no, that would not be surprising at all. I mean, the man is psychopathic.
Yeah, he is.
And for sure, it's controlled psychopathy, just like it is in Virgil.
Yeah.
From the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Right? He has directed it. Yeah.
And it's controlled. You know, and
he has funneled it into a positive thing that is there that will help people. Well, yes, his mother funneled it into a positive thing. Who knows? Yeah.
Whereas with Virgil, I suspect we never found out about Virgil from the inside, but I would suspect that he had probably a less problematic childhood because he's a lot clearer and a lot saner, and he does know what he is doing, and he knows he's controlling
his own... And that is the interesting thing, because of how much of Reed's toxic behavior seems to be a complete mystery to him.
Yeah, yeah. He really
is not a self-aware person. Mm-mm. And it's like, I always wondered, to what degree is this guy sick and not self-aware? And then season 12 is kind of entirely about how sick and not self-aware he is.
Yeah. No, he's just, well, he can't, because once he becomes self-aware, he has to deal with the relationship he had with his mother growing up that was so toxic. So extremely toxic. Okay, so we've got this episode, which is the extreme.
Yeah. It is the most extreme version of him.
Yeah. And why here's where I go again. They have loads and 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 loads of money.
Yeah.
And obviously the grandfather did not bother trying to get these children the psychiatric
help
care
they would have obviously needed. Yeah.
Because once you know that the mother has, because it's not that he's only 26.
Yep.
Right? The mother has this horrendous
extreme schizophrenia that led her to stab people.
Of the negative. of the negative kind.
Of course,
she decides that all of her fellow actors are all, well, they're not demons; they're wives of the devil. That's what makes it
six
worse,
of one,
right?
Yeah. And well, and the, but I mean, you could actually say that once again they're making a comment about rich upper class people. That the guy just put the daughter away and put the kid on drugs and then decided he wasn't going to pretend, he was just going to pretend nothing happened.
Yeah.
Because that is what rich upper class people do. They just ignore the problems. So yeah, like, I don't find that unbelievable at all.
No.
Yeah, like that one. So yeah, it's, no, there's, I a, don't, lot, I'm there's not a lot saying, to this I episode.
Don't. Yeah, there is. I'm not saying that it's unbelievable. Yeah. I'm not saying that I don't believe it. What I'm saying is that it's so typical.
Yeah, it's typical. It's frustrating.
It is not surprising.
No.
Okay, for sure. It's not surprising that they don't get that help because they don't need to get that help for their children.
Of course not.
Why would they need to get help for their children?
Well, to get help for your children would be to admit something was wrong.
Wrong, yeah. And
people
so,
will do
whatever it
anything.
Is. Yeah. Yeah.
People
so the
will
question,
do anything to avoid admitting there's something wrong.
Yeah. In with people who aren't even rich, and so with the rich.
Oh, God, yeah. With the rich,
or
it's
that
much
can
worse.
Take, what they certainly believe is that they can take care of it themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's the issue, right? They think
well,
that...
And yeah, and it's like, it's the same people who think they know better than doctors about vaccines and stuff writ large. It's like, mm-hmm. I know what's best for my child kind of people. It's like, well, yeah. No, then you, if you did, you'd be a pediatrician, you know?
It's truly, well, it's not just that. I mean, let's not go down the end.
We're not going down that rabbit hole. Today.
Well, as those people know, we can go down it some other time.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
The only thing I would say is as those children start to get measles and mumps and a whole bunch of other things and realize just how dangerous those diseases are, it's because they can do this because, right? They don't have any history of it. Nobody's ever gotten it.
Yeah, no one's ever gone through these diseases, so they don't think the diseases are real to them. Like, that's the thing. You get people your age, right? People your age, people the age of your parents, who, like, they take vaccines very seriously because they all know people who died of polio. You know?
Well, it's not just polio. We all had chicken pox.
Yeah, chicken
we
pox,
all had
measles. It was
we
terrible.
All had mumps. Mumps gives people, you know, can make men sterile and can be
scarlet fever can blind people. Like rubella can blind people. It's bad.
Well, no, rubella causes birth defects.
Jesus.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah, like
no, I mean the big thing I can still remember. In Australia, not now we're going down this, but I can still remember in Australia and some women, well, you know, well, why? Because rubella, the rubella vaccine was optional. And I opted, of course, to
take it.
Make
yeah.
Sure
yeah. To give it for all your kids. Yeah.
That my children were all vaccinated for rubella as well as measles, mumps and everything else.
Yeah.
And so, well, why are you doing that? Well, why are you doing that? Well, because... If my child gets rubella, like once you have a child and the child gets rubella, it isn't potentially that bad.
Right.
But, okay. But I said, if my child had rubella and like measles, because it's like measles, it has this period of time before you get sick where you are ragingly infectious.
Yeah.
And
you're incredibly infectious, but asymptomatic. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, infectious but asymptomatic. My child has rubella, and my child is playing with a bunch of other kids who are 3 years old or 4 years old, and one of the mothers in the playgroup, because we had these playgroups in Australia, one of the mothers in the playgroup
is pregnant, and then suddenly,
gets
boom.
The rubella,
yeah.
Gets the rubella, and that child is born with defects. I would have a really hard time living with myself.
Absolutely. Because what? Your own nervousness about you know, the phantom side effects of, yeah, that would mean that your own nervous about the phantom side effects of a vaccine had just ruined somebody's life.
Yeah, had just ruined somebody's life.
Yeah, not and that just can happen.
It's the child's life. It's the parent's life.
It's a nightmare situation. Horrendous. It is absolutely like a nightmare scenario you're talking about. But it's a nightmare scenario that happens more often than people want to believe.
But it doesn't have to happen, right? Because we have friggin' vaccines.
Well, no, and it comes back to, and that is exactly what people do with their kids that have that have these mental disorders, right? They're like, I can handle it. You know, I don't, my family business is my family business. I'll handle it. I can deal with this kid. And then, you know, you end up with these horrific, you end up with people dying of preventable diseases. You end up with people going on shooting sprees because they weren't given antipsychotic medication because their parents thought they could handle it. Like, okay. So that was our segment on vaccines. I'm not 100% sure how.
we ended up on...
Well, but I think it's not crazy to say that it's all the same psychosis with parents who a lot of it comes down to, I think, parents who don't want to be told how to raise their child, you know? And in the same way, like, the grandfather here, right, was, like, the mother was just like Reed's mother, like, infecting the child with her own psychosis, the folie à deux that they talk about all the time. And then the grandfather is the other kind, where he's just like, he would have been unwilling to admit there was a problem. You know, because they're this old rich family from New England, and it's like, oh, there's a problem? Well, where's the pill for that problem? Done. Yeah. You know? And then that would be all he wanted to hear about it, that the kid was taking the pill. So, yeah, I don't think it's, and that's what's key in this episode, I don't think it's unbelievable anything that happened here.
No. That he stopped taking his meds as soon as he stopped having to?
Yeah. As soon as there wasn't someone over his shoulder forcing him to take it, he stopped taking it.
Yeah.
And, well, this is what happens. This is an extreme version of what happens, but this is what happens. All right, so let's, this episode is going to be coming up later when we're building more of our theories about MetaRead.
About MetaRead, yeah.
But for right now, let's move on. Meta Spencer Reed. So let's move on to the next episode.
The Company. Okay. When Morgan's older sister gets into a car accident while attempting to follow a woman who eerily resembles their presumed dead cousin, Cindy. Morgan never presumed she was dead. The BAU juggle reopening the case into her disappearance and tracking down a sexual sadist involved in a sadomasochistic ring. No.
They're not juggling. Again, that's how they track down her and investigate her disappearance.
Because the sexual sadist who is involved in the sadomasochistic ring is the one who took the sister.
Yeah, exactly. They don't juggle. The S&M ring is their lead and how they're investigating. Again, they just don't know what the word juggle means. It's fine. They don't know what meanwhile means. They don't know what the word juggle means. We've just got to accept it at this point. They're never going to... And they don't want to learn, and they're not interested in learning. That's the thing. They don't want to find out that they're...
I will say that for two episodes now, we haven't had a meanwhile.
That's true. But we've still got juggling. So here's the thing. This company thing is based on a real thing that happened. I mean, there was this girl, she was a hitchhiker, I believe, kidnapped, kept in a coffin under this couple's bed for like years. And they made her sign a slave contract, right? And they told her family would be murdered if she told anyone. Like, all of the stuff in this episode, it's based on the real life story of what happened to this lady, right? But the difference is, in the real story, it's just a thing this guy wrote up, right? It's just a thing this guy wrote up to intimidate the woman he and his wife were keeping as a slave. But in this episode, they talk about how it's a well-known thing that exists in S&M circles, this playing and blah, blah, blah. But it's like these people seem to think it's actually real, to which I would respond, well, if there's a giant organization of them who pool money and use resources to cover for each other, then it is real.
Yes, and keep children.
And keep children as leverage, like, and kill people who cross them. Well, then it's not a fantasy, is it?
No, it's a like, real thing.
Maybe the company is just 12 guys, but it's still 12 guys who are involved in an organization to do this crap. So calling it like a fantasy is not really accurate at all. I mean, it's possible that the women are brainwashed into thinking that it's bigger than it actually is, and that's all well and good, but it's still a real secret torture and murder organization, guys.
Yeah. These guys. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, it's weird how they describe it in the episode, because they kind of downplay how terrifying this situation is.
Yeah.
If you see what I'm saying. Like, I don't really get why they pretend it's not that big a deal. I'm like, it's a pretty big deal. That this guy's got a lawyer he can call. That this guy, you know, that they have lawyers, that they have a secret house where they keep children, and a person whose job it is to watch after the children and only let them see them once a year.
Yeah, at Christmas.
At Christmas, Jesus. Yeah, it's a roof episode. But yes, I hope you liked Morgan's family, everybody. This is the last time you'll ever see them.
Yeah. And they got all the same actors back.
They did. No, they got all the same actors back, and that's great. But it's like, this is the last time you're ever going to see Morgan's family.
Yeah.
I mean, the man gets married.
Obviously, they couldn't get his mother.
Yes, obviously she was busy.
Yes.
But yes.
Yes, he gets married.
He gets married, and we still don't see his sisters or his mother again. Oh, it's a little weird that we never see any of these characters again. I know they don't do a lot of personal stuff with Morgan, but the man gets into a long-term relationship and gets married, and we still don't spend any more time with his family. It's a little weird.
Yeah, baby, you'd think they could have at least come to the wedding.
Yeah, but the wedding happens off camera. That's the thing. In a ridiculous 6-minute, 6-month time jump. But when they're trying to get Shamar Moore is off the show as quickly as possible. But yes, that's another conversation we're going to have in a few years. It's funny though, like as an episode, it's one of these weird things where it's like the episode is kicked off by an amazing coincidence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we just go from there. But I guess you're allowed to have one every now and then, right?
Yeah, you're allowed to have one every now and then. I mean, I just couldn't figure out why these guys came back to Chicago.
It is weird that they came back to Chicago. Took the risk of coming back to Chicago.
I guess. Why did he come back to Chicago?
Well, it's this weird situation it's never explained at all, is it? Because he did live in Chicago initially, right?
Yeah, well, they went to the same church.
Yeah, and like they went, and that's how he additionally stalked and found her. But you'd think that it's like he would know to go and get and stay gone, because it's not like he planned to live with her. I mean, to a certain degree, he lived in public with her as his wife, right? But at the same time, it wasn't so public that in the real life story, like, she went and visited her parents and said, this is the man I'm in a relationship with, and didn't tell them she was being held as a slave because she was so afraid. Whereas here, he understand it's serious enough that he's been pretending she's dead for a decade. And now he just suddenly turns up into Chicago where her whole family lives. You're right.
Yeah,
it's
that
a bit
was
of a
the stretch. Only. See, like, I can see the coincidence if they're driving down the street and the sister actually sees her.
Yeah,
that's
a fine coincidence. But maybe
what
it should have happened in Atlanta.
Yeah, maybe the sister should have been visiting in Atlanta
or work
something.
Thing or something. Yeah, she'd been
because the aunt seems to be able to fly wherever Derek is.
Exactly. Like, this is the second time she's just zipped over to wherever it was. And as he said, whenever the aunt is always ready to, like, check in on any body they find anywhere, thinking it might be her. Ah! Yeah, so it's like, it wouldn't be crazy for this episode to be set in, in Atlanta, or set in Phoenix, Arizona, or something like that. Like, have them moved. Because it's it's also this weird situation where sometimes we hear the case, like, we hear some details about the case, and when you hear details about the case, you're like, well, how did you not solve this years ago, when this guy, like, we think he did it, and then he killed himself. He had, he killed himself with a gun that he didn't own, and we didn't look into the gun at all.
Yeah, I know.
Like, come on, guys. Look into the gun now, a little.
Now, here, guess what? It might have taken place in that particular precinct in northern Chicago or somewhere
where
in
they
Chicago.
Really
I don't
hate.
Remember.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, which one?
Where they were really, 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 really corrupt. It's talked about because there was this serial killer, right?
Really?
And he was, yeah. It's on the new this year's of Inside Evil.
Chris the Chris Cuomo
show, right? And he spent two episodes talking with this guy before he committed suicide in jail.
Ooh.
After his trial, and he apologizes to people after his trial. And he's one of the few people. He said to the jury, he said, I don't blame you for finding me guilty. Because if listening to all of this, he said, I would find me guilty too.
Wow.
Even though he said, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened in Chicago. And he was going to, with this group of people. Now, these cops were... it was civil rights violations. They were extremely violent and the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, they famously had a mini Guantanamo in Chicago where they would lock people up and hide them.
One precinct.
Yeah, it was in one precinct. Now, yeah.
So they might have just been lazy, that particular group. And once, because they do say, well, once they found out that he shot himself with this gun, they just decided it was case closed.
Yeah.
Right? And that they got the guy that had probably killed her. Okay, well, yeah, but you've got that gun. So that could have happened. That one could have happened.
You're right. It's entirely possible. It's bad to say. It's bad to say, but after all of the true crime stuff I've watched and listened to, if your theory about the case is that cops are great at their job, you might want to, like, rethink your theory of the case.
Yeah.
Because there's a ton of cops who just want to go home at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and there's a ton of and there are a ton of cops who are racists who fantasize about shooting people of a different color. So it's like maybe when you hear that the guy got away because cops were lazy and phoning it in, maybe just accept that as a shockingly realistic plot development.
Well, yeah, and as I said, and I mean, the classic case in Canada is the Paul Bernardo. Well, this guy looked, Paul Bernardo looked like the sketches they've got. They did take his DNA, but he was such a nice guy, it couldn't possibly be him. What?
He literally, when going in for the blood test, was like, yeah, I understand why you want me to do this. I look a lot like that sketch. He said that to the cops! So, yeah, you're right. Competence. There you go.
Well, it's because everybody's a human being, but in some cases, they're really horrible human beings. I think in Canada, it was just, it's an attitude sort of to women, and rape isn't as,
it is seriously, absolutely.
Anyway, never mind. Okay, let's get back to this episode.
No, but it's all related because fundamentally, this guy was only able to get away with what he did for so long because the cops didn't bother looking. They're like, she's probably dead in a ditch somewhere and she'll turn up. Like, they're like, she's dead in a ditch somewhere, the body will turn up, the guy who was stalking her killed himself, case closed. And you're right that it is completely plausible that would be more than enough for them,
because you need to close cases.
Yeah, and it is Chicago. You need to keep closing cases. Yeah, it is Chicago. Everybody's got an illegal gun in Chicago because it's almost impossible to get a gun in Chicago. And it's like, it's entirely... The one thing that's not believable is that... and this is the thing. That they would... Like, I believe that the cops... would have run, like, they act like the cops never reached out to the real killer. In real life, because the guy was smart enough to, before he murdered the guy, report his gun stolen,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And in real life, and this is, it just would have made their search a teensy bit easier, like, the actual cops would have, once they ran the serial number, they would have said, what gun is it? They run the serial number, they find out it's been stolen, they would have called the real killer and said, did yeah. you sell your gun to this guy? Or, you know, they would have confirmed that he didn't sell the gun. And they might have returned the gun to him.
Yeah.
They actually might have returned the gun to him.
Yeah.
Because that does happen. So, yeah, that is the one yeah. part where I believe the cops would have at least reached out to him. And yeah. say, oh, yeah. and then later be like, oh, yeah, we even talked to this guy.
Yeah, because he bought it legally.
He bought it legally. Exactly. He had a yeah. license to own it. And so, yeah. yeah, that is the one thing where I find the cops never having looked into it at all. But you're absolutely right. After giving him the gun back, they wouldn't have then kept digging into it at all and tried to yeah. find out if he had some... They wouldn't have been like, say, what were you doing at the time of the thing? Oh, you go to the no. same church as the dead woman? No, they wouldn't have done any of that. You're totally no. right.
No, they wouldn't have done that. It's... But yeah, I mean that's interesting. But you know, yeah. so there you go. They've got a guy, they've got blah 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 blah. Now mind you, it may be that they are living outside of Chicago because he must have had a job.
Yeah, that's where his career is, presumably.
Yeah, his career and his job is right in outside of Chicago. So
yeah.
But you know, and after all of these years, and after all, it's been 12 years. And
yeah, maybe they just, she's maybe he not, just got sloppy. Yeah.
Well, and she's not going to run away, and she's That's not going to tell her family that she's been kidnapped because they've got the child.
Yeah.
Right? She's got the child that he holds over her. So... You know, I mean, maybe that's why they're still in Chicago.
It's possible. Although, you're right.
You know,
Chicago's
I mean,
a big
possible.
Place. Yeah.
And he would have kept her. He would have kept her bound
for the
awful
first few
long
years.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh, for at least probably 5, 6, 7 years until she Something finally like realized that. There was. Well, until. Well, at least until she,
had a kid. She
got pregnant, had the child, and then had the child taken away.
Yeah. Yeah, and then yeah. at some point, you're right, he could leave her out on a longer leash, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's infuriating a little because you got that scene where she, like, steals a thing from a store to tip Derek off. I'm like...
That's stupid.
It's pretty stupid.
That was pretty stupid.
It's a pretty contrived thing, and I'm like, you know, you
like
can just...
Like, how you would get... From that to the she has to have a child because Derek is convinced that she would have never been brainwashed. Well,
I know. That's not how people work, Derek.
Derek, that's not how people work, but, you know, it was fine.
Yeah, I know. You just have to accept it.
You just have to kind of accept that. But that was, you know, and they did finally... get him and Derek gets to beat him up and
yeah,
you know
blah, they, blah, blah, all blah. The characters get what they want at the end of the episode, you know, they
yeah,
get the
you know.
She's got her son and you know they're happy yeah, they've yeah. all the family's been reunited. It's a nice ending to the episode, but I just felt like some of the steps were kind of silly. Or
and of course she's never going to need to she's never going to need a therapist because Derek doesn't need a therapist, so heaven forbid everything's just hunky-dory and fine, and now Derek can go back to being who he was and ignore his family again.
Resume ignoring his family the way he does most of the time.
Yeah. After
yeah,
all.
He does not, honestly, he does not act like somebody with a big family.
No.
Who he's no. supposedly close with.
Yeah, but none of them have families, except for Prentice.
That's true. Prentice has a mother. Yeah, I guess Aaron's mother's dead too?
Yeah, I think so. The one that isn't is JJ does have a mother.
JJ does have a mother who shows up a couple of times. You're absolutely right. We'll have more to say about JJ's terrible mother going forward.
Yeah, I've just been reading the season 10 reviews for editing purposes, and I'm just going, oh, God.
Yeah, it was a troubled season. Season 10, most popular season of the show.
Yeah, let's not go there right now. I mean, just to say this, I'm editing the reviews, right, for
Count Vargelon, yeah.
For Count Vargelon, right? So I'm reading these reviews for Count Vargelon, and oh God, I've forgotten what I was going to say. And I'm reading them, and oh, I know what I was going to say. I'm reading them, and I'm going, did I check out this season? Did I actually watch
this season? Do I remember any of these episodes of television?
Some of them I do, right? So remember, obviously, yeah. I did watch season 10, but I'm looking at it and going,
what?
Okay. There's the odd one here that I know, and I'm reading what you're writing, and I'm going, okay, I don't remember. Like, who is an app? Oh, okay. Never mind. It was just like, it was the weirdest thing. And I've just finished, I think, 11, right? Number 11, episode 11 of season 10.
All right. So let's move on to Divining Rod, episode 721.
This is a weird, weird episode.
One of the weirdest.
Yeah. When an Edith, Oklahoma woman is stabbed to death the same night a serial killer is executed, the BAU determines the crime was committed by a copycat and sets out to prevent them from taking another life. Meanwhile, Prentice grows anxious after placing an offer on a house. In DuPont Circle. Okay. Yeah.
Here, it's kind of amazing that she buys a house in DuPont Circle and then quits her job and moves to London 2 weeks later. And when she comes back, she's living in a condo. Did she sell the house? Does she keep it as a rental property? What exactly happened there? It's never mentioned again. It's just weird because a bunch of the episode is about real estate drama, but then it's like, that's never going to come up again. It's weird.
Well, I'm certain the writers wrote it hoping that she would stay.
Come back next year. Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think anyone was expecting her to quit.
And she went, I am out of here, guys.
Yeah. Well, now that we found out that she didn't want to come back in season 7 at all. Oof.
She was not happy about having to be in season 7.
No, she was not. Oh, though, when we're done talking about this episode, I will tell you a hilarious Paget Brewster story. So remind me to do that before we sign off. So what happened was, this episode is crazy, because it's like, I mean, we can just talk about it. We don't care about spoiling things. It's a very old episode, and everyone's seen it. A woman brainwashes men into serial killing for her?
No. Well, kind of, that's though. I shouldn't say that. When you get to the end, that's exactly
that. How
you
no, that's it. That. Please.
Yeah. Yeah. Except that he's in jail.
But she wanted him to be in jail. Like, did she turn in her first husband? Because she just wants to be the wife of a serial killer. Like, I think the message is this character enjoys being the wife of a famous serial killer. Because she's going to marry this guy. She's absolutely, like, she's going to marry this guy in prison. Of course she's going to marry this guy in prison. And you get to the end and we find out that no, all of the obsession with the 1001 Nights was her.
Yeah, well, you can read it, like, that's the problem. You can read it another way. Okay, so she's got, here is, okay, now, I'm not, okay.
Please.
Here's how things go, okay? Yes. First of all, I don't think that she brainwashed her first husband into being a serial, first of all, she's been raised with a father who says she attracts the evil in men. My good yes. God, what a horrible
I know, plot. I know. Yeah, no, no. I mean, okay. her father's a monster. No one's saying her father okay. isn't the real villain, now stop obviously. Here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So her father's, for whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
Now, the only thing is that last shot of her with her grandfather, I would just, you assholes. That's just my, you assholes for this episode. Because you can take this episode and you read it two different ways. So what happens yeah. is she's got this thing from her father in her head. She marries this guy. She has a great life with this guy.
Yeah.
Right? They never have any children, you know, and he does this serial killing thing off on the side.
Yeah.
She doesn't know anything about it, and then he's caught.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And she doesn't turn him in. He's caught. Because yeah. it's clear somebody else sent the inspiration stuff and the Twelfth Night stuff to her husband.
Thousand One Night stuff. No, she's the one who sent that stuff.
No, no. No, 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 no. You don't have to read it that way. You can okay. read it that way. I am giving you an alternate reading.
All right, give me the alternate reading, please.
Just listen to me. No, because you're stuck in the one. So what happens, right, is she gets all of these letters and has thrown out the ones that are calling her a horrible woman for sticking yep. with him. For whatever reason, okay, she's married him. Her father has told her she brings out the evil in
she's
men.
Cursed, yeah.
So she feels inside that she is probably responsible somehow or another. He would never have done this if he hadn't married her. Okay. Yeah. So that's in her brain, the structure that's going on. She decides she has to stick with him. Therefore, he's in jail. She keeps visiting him in jail, but she gets all this attention and she gets all this mail and she has a purpose to her life. Okay. Right? So he's been in jail for I don't know how many years, and it's been constant, right? That
yeah, like 10 years or something.
And she's what we don't see building is that though she knows that he's eventually going to die, yeah. and then what's her friggin' life going to be like? And yeah. so what happens, right, is that consciously or not, she starts developing this relationship with the driver.
Obviously,
the man,
yes.
who is obviously a little bit becomes massively enamored of her. She's constantly talking about either her wigs or her surgery, and she's told him everything. And
what's she gonna do when he's dead and she's nobody and blah 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 blah.
Blah blah blah. And she's talking, and so he then decides that you know he's gonna take care of her.
Yeah.
Right. Because I don't see. Because what I don't see is that the tears, well, like when she sees all of this, when she sees what he's done, that she is just devastated that he's done this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, but she didn't want him to do this. And I do think that that's true. But the line is, as she's walking out, she says, well, I guess what my father said is true. Right? Yes. And then that feeds into the delusion that she's already created in her mind of, that her first husband would have never done this if he hadn't married her. And now she's looking at another man who wouldn't have done this if he had never met her.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? So now she's just decided that she is truly this evil person who brings out true evil in men, and she's embraced the role, and now she's going to be with this guy until he gets executed.
Okay, that is one possible reading.
Yeah, no, it is an alternate
no, I,
reading.
But
except for that,
I have to say, they don't. There is the mystery of the Scheherazade letter, right? And she claims not to know about it. I'm saying that by having, and the implication is that it's like the real killer, like they attribute it to the killer. And then at the end of the episode, they pointedly make it so we find out that the killer has never heard of Scheherazade. The killer has never heard of 1001 Nights. But she herself, the last thing, literally the last thing that happens in the episode, is she is a very familiar with 1001 Nights.
No, what happens? No, what I would say is that this is among the letters, because she takes all the letters that they get.
Of course.
Okay? and she takes and she reads them to him. And this is the one that he found the best. So she would read it to him again and again, and then she got involved with this herself. I still think it comes from someone else. Like, you can argue. The episode wants you to believe what you're saying.
That it was all her. That's what I'm saying. I agree that there's another reading. I agree that your reading is valid. I'm saying, what is the intended reading by the author? And I think it's closer to what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. When you get to the end, right, where you see...
Here is what I think the narrative of the... Yeah. The look on her face.
Why is the guy giving her blonde hair?
Yeah, I didn't quite... Oh, because that's what the victims all had.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense because she never wears a blonde wig and she was never blonde.
No. No, but I guess they were trying to say that the victims had to have... Like, the victims were an idealized version of his wife. Because you're right. I mean, she probably...
Look anything like his wife. No. They're nothing. Look like his mother, the first killer, right? So what I'm saying is it would have been better had he been killing, he'd been using the same MO.
Yes.
Right? But the women had dark hair.
Yeah, that would make sense because of his fixation was on this woman, not the whatever the original guy's fetish was.
Yeah, his fixation wasn't on her ex-husband's
fetish. It was on her. You're absolutely right about that. But what I would say the message of the episode is, and wait, let me just say my theory of the message of the episode. Because here's the narrative that I think the episode is going for. They're a couple. She has found herself because of what she thinks is going on with her. She's found herself in some way a passively violent man. Now, and this is what they full on say in the text, she gets cancer. And they're not able to have sex. And what I think the episode wants us to believe is that she essentially... passively in some way gives him, you know, license to go out and have sex with other women in such a way that it's interpreted that she can never find out and blah, blah, blah. And it gets twisted up in his head into he's got to kill the women that he has sex with is what I think the message of the episode is. I'm not saying that that makes intellectual sense. I don't think that's believable, right? And so that is his motive for killing because he can't have sex with his wife. By the way, how many serial killers do actually claim that that's why they started killing? That they couldn't have sex with their wives anymore after they had kids? Like, that is actually part of the self-justifying narrative of a number of different serial killers. So I'm not pulling this from nowhere. And then... after he gets caught, right, as you say, she gets off on the being the wife, the attention of being the wife of this monster, and then he's gonna die, and so she starts talking about how, with the guy, about how romantic it was, that it's like, that he was, couldn't bear the pain it would cause me to know that he was cheating on me, and that's why he killed the women, or just some offhanded comment like that. And maybe it wasn't intentionally designed, right, to get the guy to start killing, but I think on a subconscious level, they're saying she knew it would have that effect.
Well, yes.
On a subconscious level. But then again, in my reading of it, she wrote the Scheherazade letter, so there you go.
Well, no, what I would say, I can buy a lot of that. What I would say is...
Because again, Scheherazade is a story about a woman who's married to a monster. There you go.
Yeah, here.
Please continue.
Here. No. But what the other thing is that you sit there and you go, okay, so was her father a serial killer?
That's a really good question.
You know? That because he is...
Well, her father was definitely molesting her.
Yeah. So,
and her father definitely told her that it was her fault she was being molested because she brings out the evil in men. Like, that's all canon within the episode.
Yeah. Although it that they don't even go anywhere near that.
Which is crazy, because it's so plain. Like, they actually have the character use the language the frigging child molesters use of saying, you made me do this, you brought this out in me. That's what frigging child molesters say. They have the dad canonically say that within the episode, but they don't go the extra step and admit that she was molested by her dad.
Yeah.
Of course she was.
Of course she was. I mean, so she picks men like her dad.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying. And it's like, that's why I think that she subconsciously, and that's what I think the episode is saying, that she subconsciously, I don't think with the first guy she did it subconsciously, she did it consciously to drive him to serial killing. I think she chose ways of interacting with him that made him more ready to objectify women and more ready to commit violence against them.
No, because she's marrying a man like her father, she's behaving towards him the way she behaved towards her father.
Exactly.
And that gives him the license. But you will notice that, as I said, I mean, you can say, if you say using your narrative that she subconsciously said you can go out and, or he even consciously said you can go out and have sex, he goes out and deliberately has sex with women who don't look like his wife.
Yes.
Okay. So that would be the thing. And as I said, and that would be further reinforced if you had the new killer, the new serial killer, kill women who have dark hair and cut their hair.
You're absolutely right, because the new killer is specifically doing it to build a wig for her.
Yeah.
You're right that they to make, because it's weird. We're in the situation where, like, more than half of it points towards my theory.
Yeah.
But because they made him also murder blonde women,
yeah,
it points more towards your theory.
Yeah.
100% this episode would be saying what I think it's trying to say, well, if they would just do it all because he was making her a wig and killing it. He's killing them in the way the husband killed, as a tribute, and say, I can replace your husband to her.
Yeah.
But he should have been killing brown-haired women to make her a wig as a sign of their love for each other. You're completely right about that.
You know, and 100%. It's really funny because I agree with you that end, that's what pisses me off. You should have just left it, like, as she's walking out, right? And she says, well, I guess my father was right.
Yeah.
And just leave it at that. Not give us, you know, the picture of her with her grandfather in the divining rod looking evil.
I know.
What? You know.
I agree.
Leave that particular
well enough
out.
Alone. I know.
Given us the episode, you could have made a few minor changes. You would have still known that at some level she is responsible for this. Conscious or unconscious, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? Because she was turned into this by her own father.
Yes.
She's turned into this evil woman. She wasn't evil as a child with grandfather learning how to define.
I agree. And like the thing is, our explanation for this episode is completely 100% satisfying, but then they friggin' give you that shot of her as the bad seed.
Yeah.
That's not what this episode's about.
No. She's sexually abused by her father.
Yes.
And then she picks, it turns out, and as I said, and then the question would be, maybe her father was a serial killer. Why didn't somebody, you could have just woven all of that into,
together,
like at the end, you could have had something about her father sexually abusing her. They should have made that connection when she tells them what the father says.
Yep.
And then at the end, you could have had them musing, like as she walks out and says, well, maybe my father was right. You could have had the team on the plane musing about whether or not the father had been a serial killer. Maybe they should be looking into that. And it wouldn't matter that they'll never look into it. They never look into anything, you know.
They don't. They never follow up on things.
About that. And then I wouldn't be so pissed off. Other than that, because once you get rid of that stupid picture of her with her grandfather, because it's her grandfather, not her father.
Because the grandfather's taught about divining rods, I remember.
Yeah, and, you know, if you had just left that off, I would have said this was really a good episode.
Oh, absolutely. But that's the fact that at the end of the episode, they're like, oh, she's also a bad seed. No, you kill everything good about this episode.
You killed the whole episode.
No, you're totally right.
Jeez. You know, you have to leave them walking out satisfied. Can't you guys get this through your head?
I know. I agree.
Sometimes I just don't know sometimes I just don't think that they know what they're writing.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, to what degree do they understand that this woman was molested by her father? Because I think the narrative we have built for this character, she has been molested by her father her whole childhood. She believed she was responsible because she was told. She found a guy who was just like her dad. Who is going to abuse her in the same way because she thinks that's what a relationship is, right? She gets cancer, they can't have sex, she gives him permission to go out and implies in such a way that she should never find out about it. He twists this in his head to, absolutely right, I'll make sure because he's racked up with guilt for cheating on his wife, and he takes that guilt out on the women that he murders.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, all of this, one-to-one, makes perfect sense if they would just... And then, when he's in jail and he's going to be executed, she desperately needs this relationship to happen again, so whether she means it to or not, she
sets it up.
She sets it up in the 10 years of hanging out with this...
guy.
Well, 8 years of hanging out with this driver to the prison. And it's like, sits there talking with him on lunches and blah, 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 and he sees how much she loves... and is devoted to this guy, and he wants that, and he wants to protect her, and it gets all twisted up in his head. Yeah. And if you started it off with her being abused by her dad as being the catalyst for all of this, the episode makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely perfect sense.
Except for the part where this guy's able to pull off frigging 4 murders with all of the women conveniently being alone in easily accessible houses.
That's
to the point where even one of them, even though she knows that blonde ladies in her part of town are being targeted, goes back to her house alone. Well, no, with her boyfriend, but still, like, goes back to her house at all.
No, no. She does. She initially goes back alone because she sends her boyfriend off for the beer.
I know. Like, no, you know there's a murderer in the name. Like, that part is just ridiculous.
Stupid.
No, it's profoundly stupid. Yeah, but, you know,
I suppose it's to highlight, make tension.
No, it is. They needed another kill.
Yeah.
They just needed another kill because that's what the show is. But yeah, like, this had the potential, had they gone all in, and again, the show's called Criminal Minds. Had they gone all in on the backstory, on the psychology of this woman, I'm willing to say that this would have been one of the more interesting episodes of the season.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the best.
Yeah. No, because it's well constructed.
Yeah.
The whole thing, except for that bad seed part. You know?
It's the bad seed part, and you're right, he should have been making her a replacement wig from brown-haired women. But no, it can't be brown-haired women. And this is where the writers make it so it has to be blonde-haired woman, because they at first have to think it's just a copycat of the guy. And if it was brown-haired women, and he killed blonde-haired women, and his wife had brown hair, they would right away be able to figure out that it was the focus was on the new on his wife.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that she would know anything. Yeah,
no, it wouldn't. You're right. Yeah. But the show wants it. You're right. It wouldn't have changed their investigation. The show wants it to be a twist for the audience. And if it's brown-haired women, you can't have the characters not figure out that it's about the wife right away, is what I'm saying. The audience needs to be, like, kept in the dark for the twist. Cogito ergo sum. They have to make it the same blonde-haired women. I know, stupid joke. Thank you for laughing at it. So, therefore, you have to make it blonde women so that it's only later in the episode that they can have the giant reveal that it's all about the wife. That's the issue.
And it took Descartes to bring that to fruition.
All right. So, that's it for this week's episodes. As you can see, there was some bonkers stuff in here with that last episode. And really one of the high points of Matt Gubler's directing career in the first episode. So that's, if you're going to be watching along with us next week, if your homework is episodes 722 and the two-parter that wraps up the season 23 and 24. What are the synopses?
No, you want me to give the titles or the synopses?
Just the titles. You're right, just the titles.
Profiling 101.
Oh, the
Yes.
Womb Raider episode.
Yeah. What's this called? Okay, I think it's called... Oh! Oh, yes, they do their cutesy thing again. Hit, run. So, 23 is hit, 24 is run.
Because it's hit and run. Okay, well, that's... That should be a lot of fun. We're going to wrap up the season. We're going to have final thoughts on the season. Although, I think this week we've spoiled that we probably think Heathrich Manor is the best episode of the season. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, before we go, I did promise you that story about Padgett Brewster, which is after quitting Criminal Minds, she was on Community for season 6.
Yeah.
And she's very good on Community. If you don't watch Community, she's hilarious on it. She's fantastic. But she was going with, flying with Dan Harmon, to the creator of Community, to go to, I think, South by Southwest to talk about season 6 before it aired. And they were waiting in the security line, and she says to him, go back five places from me. And he's like, why? And she's like, you'll see. And so he goes back a bunch in line, and she goes through, and she gets singled out to do a search of her belongings. And then she meets him on the other side, and he's like, what, how did you know you're going to get searched? And she's like, I have not been searched when getting onto a plane for 10 years because the TSA people get to pick whoever they want for a quote unquote random search. And what you have to understand is people who work in any kind of security job, law enforcement job, they love cop shows.
So they watch Criminal Minds.
And so they all watch Criminal Minds. And they all want an autograph. So she always gets extra searched at the airport because the people want autographs.
Oh, that's funny.
Isn't that beautiful?
Gorgeous.
And she's like, if you're with me, they're going to search you too. So just go a couple of steps back. No, it's beautiful. Yeah. All right. So yes, join us back here next week for the grand finale. That should be a lot of fun. And then after the finale, we're going to be watching stuff between the seasons. There's a movie that we might be checking out, but I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to see if it's out on demand yet or if it's still in theaters. It's going to depend. I mean, but there's a movie that I'm very interested to talk about, especially now that I'm caught up with the show. So that should be a lot of fun. We're going to do that. But until then, if you'd like to get in touch with us, if you have any comments, if you have any questions, if you have any suggestions for profiling-related fiction you think we should watch, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you were listening to this on an app, be sure to rate and review it, because that is how people find things. We will see you back here next week for the grand finale of Episode 7. And just a reminder, if you haven't been listening to the Monday episodes as well, we've got all of Suspect Behavior up there. It's definitely worth a listen. We love that show. So we'll see you back here next week. But until then, thanks for listening and au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.